Did I tell you that I actually tried to buy a Surface Book?
You did not tell me that.
When I moved, I knew that I needed a new computer because my MacBook was pretty old. And because of going freelance, I just had this understanding that my freelance requirements were not going to fit around my weird iPad desires like my last job let me. Mm-hmm. That was right after the Touch Bar Mac had come out. And so I was looking to get one, but it just wasn't really a compelling device, and Mac OS has not been very compelling to me for a long time. And that was right after the Surface Pro, or whatever the heck that thing is called, came out, that really pretty big desktop touchscreen computer.
The huge one, the Studio?
Yeah. That thing came out and people were like, oh, it's really good and I love it and all of that. So I was sort of getting swept up in the whole Surface concept, and I went and bought the Surface Book, or whatever it is that they call that thing, the one that's like basically the MacBook equivalent.
Yeah.
And I brought it home, plugged it in, opened it, and remembered that Windows is bad and felt very uncomfortable with the millions of weird screens that popped up and software updates and all of that.
Yeah.
And I took it back the next morning and got this Touch Bar Mac. But the thing is that should have been a, oh my gosh, the Macs really are so much better kind of thing. But it was just like, yeah, this is marginally a better computer, which isn't the thing that you want people to say about your product, I feel like.
No, it's not. I'm more or less satisfied. And it seems like we have this. Do you have the 15-inch?
Yeah, I got the 15-inch Touch Bar Mac.
So we have the same machine. I think the bigger problem is just that I don't like using a Mac anymore.
Me either.
I'm so tired of like window management.
Me too. Today I had a client that requires me to use Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so Facebook just isn't that awesome to navigate on the iPad. It's actually gotten worse, weirdly, in Safari. If you try to like click on pages, sometimes it just doesn't click. I don't know why. Mm. So I had my Mac out and I had Safari and Messages and Things opened. And somehow I hated that experience, even though that's exactly the same apps and exactly the same stuff that I use on my iPad.
Yeah.
But there's this weird mental fatigue that I feel when all the windows are cluttered one over each other. And I know my desktop is full of screenshots because I'm terrible at managing my desktop. And
ooh,
all that stuff's just not pleasant for me.
The main thing that I've been realizing about my use of the Mac lately, and I'm on a Mac, you know, 8 to 6 every day, except during lunch, when I have my iOS devices and I stay as far away from my computer as I can. What I've realized is even with two displays, I use the Mac open. I have my Retina screen working and I usually keep kind of communication apps on that screen, messages and Slack and stuff like that. And I have a large 27-inch monitor that's my main desktop. But what I've realized is that I'm actually using spaces on both of the desktops pretty religiously. And it's mirroring what I have finally been able to do in the last year on an iPad.
Hmm.
If I could have multiple windows of one app running on iOS, I would basically be in the same situation. And if I had more screen real estate. But, you know, I'm still on a 9.7-inch iPad. If I feel like just a little bit larger that my prospective next iPad will be, will make a huge amount of difference in having two or three panes of different things running at a time. And like having those persistent spaces and multitasking really makes the way I use the devices much more similar in practice now.
Do you like the whole apps get stuck together thing that iOS 11 brought about?
I would like it if I could stick one app with multiple different apps, you know.
Mm, that's true.
The one limitation, that's just an iOS limitation of not being able to use the same application for two different things at once, except Safari, is the only thing that's keeping me from being able to do everything the same way on iOS, more or less, except with less fiddling with the size of windows, which I really hate doing. But yeah, I like the concept. I hope that the kind of Safari tab model is an indication of where Apple's trying to go under the hood with how multitasking works. And it doesn't seem like that huge of a leap technologically.
Mm.
Right now, it's pretty limited. You know, the way around it is that I use like Drafts and IA Writer at the same time for the same thing. But because they're paired with different apps, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Can you do the whole three apps at the same time, one in the little popover on a 9.7-inch or no?
Yeah, you can. And I do that.
Okay.
That's usually Drafts or Notes. But, you know, it depends. I find that I actually rarely need to use three apps at a time.
No.
But it's hard for me to remember what's over there.
Right, me too.
which is kind of the thing that's missing from that Spaces view or whatever it's called, the new multitasking switcher.
So iOS 11 is one of those weird things where I wasn't really happy with the way that it was before, but I don't know if this way is any better in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that iOS 10 had a lot of weird limitations that were really annoying, but I learned the limitations very easily, and then I just understood what to do and like how to work as quickly and efficiently as possible with those limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like in iOS 11, it's now almost been, I mean, who knows? I've been running the beta on the iPad for a long time, so it's been many, many months. And I feel like I still don't know what the heck I'm doing half the time.
Mm.
Like I'll do a really bad job at trying to get from app to app and remembering what is where and opening messages in weird ways when I could do it easier in other ways. And I feel like that's not great that it's been a long time and I still feel kind of like I don't know what I'm doing. Like I'm still learning this thing. And I imagine that that'll change mm-hmm. sooner or later with mm-hmm. 12 or 13 or whatever it's going
to
be.
Well, and hardware changes. That's the thing. Like you've mentioned this to me in the past that having an iPhone 10 is starting to screw your brain up. And like that sort of is why I waited with the iPhone. Or I didn't wait. I got an iPhone 8 instead. I waited to go to the future interaction model because I'm still like a double click the home button person. Like, and so my feeling is less that I don't know what I'm doing in iOS 11 and more that I'm just kind of halfway between worlds, that I still do some things the old way and do some of the new things. And there's also definitely things that are much more efficient new ways to do things that I haven't learned to do. I'm barely trying drag and drop even across Windows.
Me either.
We learned how to do it in the age of like copy and paste as the system hack to do everything.
Yeah.
And that's just still how I do it. But I don't feel encumbered by it. And the idea of having workspaces in the multitasking switcher that I know intuitively what's in there, that's something that I know I will use instantly as soon as it's possible to have the same app in multiple windows. Like the ideal example for me would be OmniFocus. Because the way I use my Mac, I have an OmniFocus window open in every space. I've got the main OmniFocus window is a full screen app, so it's its own space with the toolbar and all that.
Mm.
But then in every space where I have browser windows or text editors or graphics, whatever I'm doing, I have kind of like a Burning Man work space, kind of personal everything else space, and then I have an audio space, which is the one that's up on my Mac right now. And I don't have an OmniFocus window in this one, but in the other two, I have different perspectives zoomed in with the toolbars closed, just like a little strip of OmniFocus on the side that looks exactly the way it would on iOS. And if I could do that, I would instantly be able to click into the model on iOS where one of these spaces is my work space and one of my spaces is my reading space and one is my writing space or whatever.
Mm.
And I would definitely use that. The only thing missing is multitasking in multiple windows. The thing I was going to say about hardware, though, your hesitation about where iOS 11 is at as far as teaching us these mental models, like I'm right there with you, but I also have a feeling that we're going to get iPads that have a completely new hardware interaction model. Not completely new if you're using the iPhone 10, but I have to imagine there's like a full bezel-free, like wall-to-wall iPad, hopefully without a notch on two different sides of it or something, where the corners are going to be in play the way that they are on the new iPhone, and swiping from the edge is going to be a much more obvious gesture, and we won't have that home button crutch anymore. And hopefully those two devices working the same way, more or less, will make it less, make there will be less dissonance in what we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy that there's iOS 11 iPhone 10 edition, iOS 11 iPhone everything else edition, iOS 11 iPad Pro edition, and iOS 11 iPad edition. Like, it's really weird that there's four pretty distinct versions of this operating system that all have to figure out how to do a lot of the same things in wildly different ways, even just stuff like Control Center.
Yeah.
I mean, if I think it's annoying as a user, I bet it's extremely annoying as a developer who's actually making iOS 11 exist.
To have to do it this many different ways.
Trying to rejigger all of those things, yeah, and figure out how to make that fit on a piece of hardware. So, yeah, I think the hope would be that the next iteration of some of these hardware pieces will unify all of that, but I guess it could go the other way too and just add another version.
The season is coming.
Yes.
Presumably the invitations will start going out and then all of the... Oh, and then there's already iPhone rumors. And it's I've got something I'd much rather talk about than Apple rumors today anyway, but the biggest iPhone ever is rumored.
Oh yeah? What's that mean? Like a plus X? A plus 10?
Yes.
10 plus?
Yeah, it's impossible to imagine how these things will be named. But what I saw, it looked really credible too, and there was like a faceplate of one and a model number and everything. So this has come in at around the same time. I mean, there was what happened last year, if I recall correctly, was that the HomePod firmware leaked.
Everything, yeah.
And that's how we knew about the iPhone X. It's hard to say how these got out, but it looks pretty good. And there's multiple people chiming in with reasons to believe these rumors. What it sounds to me like is that there's three models. There is a big one that's like a 10 plus. There is a second generation 10.
10-2.
Yes, a 10-2. the size of the one that you've got. And then there's another one in between, like a 6.1 inch screen that is not an OLED screen, and that will be a lower cost device.
Okay.
They're all getting bigger. It makes the decision way easier for me if the size that the iPhone X is now the small one.
Are you an 8 or an 8 plus person?
I'm an 8, a regular 8. I did consider going plus before we knew about the iPhone X. I was considering that. And you know, come to think of it, I don't really know why I didn't this time. As my last iPhone of the classic generation, I don't know why I didn't just try it for the heck of it, but I'm pretty happy with the iPhone 8. I think maybe the determination I made was, wow, the camera got significantly better between the 7 and the 8.
Right.
So I might as well keep the portability. I really think the iPhone 8 camera is great. I mean, it's certainly, it's vastly better than any iPhone camera I've had. So I didn't feel the need to go all the way up to the big phone just for that.
Yeah.
And I don't regret anything. As I've said, as I've told myself over and over and over again, I don't regret it. But that iPhone X does really seem to hit the sweet spot for what I want.
I say this here because I think it'll be fun to remember that I said these words to you aloud when the new one comes out and Apple sells it to me and I decide that I want it. But I honestly can't imagine wanting a 10 plus.
Yeah.
I love the size of this phone so much. The only reason that I ever had the pluses was because the camera and because of just a few little features that I liked when I had a bigger screen. It felt a little claustrophobic to me, the non-plus sized phones.
Yeah.
But I mean, this screen it just feels massive, the iPhone X screen.
Yeah.
And it feels good. I feel like carrying a bigger screen than that, like a whole screen that's bigger than this one, would just feel pretty awkward. And so, I guess that they'll tell me that the 10 features that it has that the 10-2 doesn't, and I'll decide, that is worth it after all.
Yeah, but we'll see. Who can't imagine what they might be, but it's definitely the high-end version from what it seems like. So there's got to be something. I like that it's long, the iPhone X.
Yeah.
Because that's very text-friendly, and my desire to move my reading to a one-handed device still burns within me. And I do read on my phone pretty regularly, but given the choice at home between like a, you know, an iPhone 8 and an iPad, the choice seems obvious, but a slightly wider and a lot longer screen sounds so great.
I've probably read 10 or 12 novels on the iPhone X.
Nice.
Where I usually would have done my reading on an iPad.
Yeah.
Because it just is amazing. And reading at night with the OLED screen, you know, the night mode, it's just so good. It's what I've always really wanted.
Yeah.
It doesn't take up any light at all, but it's really easy to read and very easy to control. Oh, it's amazing. Can I tell you a thing that I love doing on the iPhone X that I'm sure purists would hate me for?
Please.
Is I love watching videos zoomed in so that
with
that
the notch on it?
Yeah, takes over a piece of it. I love it.
Why?
Because it looks futuristic.
Uh-huh.
It looks so cool.
It looks like some kind of, like, heads-up display of some futuristic vehicle.
Yeah, watching a movie with the corners rounded and even a little bit dented in, it's like, oh, that just looks great. Yeah. Sometimes I'll watch dumb stuff on YouTube, and I'll always do that. But even some capital S serious, capital F films, I watch that way just because I think it looks real cool. Mm. And that's enough for me to mess with the artistic intent.
That's awesome.
and not go backwards. So I know purists wouldn't like that.
There was so much angst about that. And I can't remember clearly, but I feel like one of the demos on stage had zoomed in video.
Yeah.
And people were scandalized.
Yeah, there's like a picture of Lawrence of Arabia with the...
Right.
Yeah, the notch dented in, and people did not like that.
No, but clearly Apple doesn't care. It's not like they didn't notice. So it's good to hear that you don't either. I certainly don't mind the design or the asymmetry of it. I don't know if I would watch like Star Wars, like some sacred film of mine, with a chunk taken out of it, but I'll try it. I'll try it for you and see.
It's like carrying a movie in your hand, you know, like more than anything else. It's not like carrying an iPhone that's playing a movie. It just feels like the movie is in your hand while you're watching it. So it's really fun. Like, I like that a lot. And even sometimes I'll be doing like something like cooking, and I'll just put it on a little iPhone stand and have a movie playing or a YouTube video playing. And it just feels fun to have the entire screen, this massive, long screen taken up by a really cool looking video.
It's nice to hear anyone expressing that fun about using their Apple devices these days, which is expressing unorthodox opinions about Apple is getting increasingly hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
The orthodox opinion being Apple isn't fun anymore, and everything is miserable, and you all must be miserable with me while I pontificate about how miserable everything is.
Yeah.
There is no talking about technology without talking about technology anymore, and maybe ever.
Yeah, you're right.
Certainly when I first started reading people's feelings about technology, it was not a mass market conversation.
I kind of forget that. I don't remember that's true.
Yeah.
It's very strange that even you saying that feels shocking to me. And I look back only a few years ago and I say, oh, that is absolutely the case. I do remember very vividly when no one but me cared about this, and when blogs like Engadget seemed smaller than other blogs that I cared about that dealt with stuff that would today seem very minor. It's all been subsumed by technology. And if I have been subsumed by conversations about technology, the whole world has, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I feel like a weird thing that has happened is that it's moved from people having opinions about the tech that we have to people having opinions about those opinions to people having opinions about your ability to have opinions. Like, it's a weird thing where the hot take has kind of grown into a meta version of itself, where you can endlessly comment about one thing and the comments that one thing has produced for an eternity. And that is a real part of the world of technology today. You couldn't release a product without considering what kind of opinions and takes and articles will be written about it and the ensuing conversation that will come from there.
Mm-hmm.
You said like that's frustrating to you. Why is it frustrating to you? I get it, but I'm just curious to know what you mean specifically by that.
Well, it's always been frustrating to me, even when I was a participant in it, by which I mean somebody generating hot takes, multiple hot takes a day for money.
Right.
And I very quickly turned to making fun of it, even as I was doing it, and also trying really hard not to do it. And Read Write Web took some pride in not really doing that as much as we could. Everything changed once we were sold to a San Francisco ad tech company, of course. But the blog I joined was an analysis site. We really tried to cut through just opinion, and the history of certain features and certain technologies was the kind of stuff we would add to the news. Not so much the business world startup, like this company is already working on this feature, and that competition stuff that everybody was into at the time on sites like TechCrunch. Ours was more about this technology was actually pioneered in this earlier thing that disappeared, and we all used it because we're huge nerds. And so we liked to have more of a historical angle, but as everything has accelerated, it's become impossible to remember what happened like a month ago in tech news. And so it's just built up into this meta commentary about everybody else's commentary. And one of the things that quickly became frustrating to me about that was how religious it got. And I use that word loaded with a lot of meaning that I will presently unpack, but like you and I both have uses of that word that have positive connotations, and that's not what I mean, because this isn't a sacred thing. When I say that tech news and opinion got religious, what I mean is that it formed teams, and people talking about other people's take became, well, they're obviously biased because they like this or that, and therefore, you know, their analysis means nothing to me. Like, I'm not interested in what this person thinks of that device or application because they are an uncultured user of such and such, and I am not. And therefore, we're not even talking about the same thing. And yeah, it's obvious why that sucks. But the thing that it takes away from, the thing that really felt like was happening on a good day when I was writing about this stuff full time, the thing that this religious argument takes away from is actually talking about what this stuff does and what it helps us with, or what its risks are and what challenges it presents to us as users. I mean, anybody who's been following anything I've written, especially at the tail end and afterward of my writing about tech full time, will be familiar with this line of thinking. But to me, if you're not talking about what effect this technology has on us, like human beings who use it, you're not really talking about it at all. You're talking about something abstract and ultimately inconsequential. I mean, I think it's natural for people to talk about companies when talking about technology, because it's obvious that we're going to talk about the products, the tools, and that those are going to be the things that generate the news, because those are the things that, where the rubber hits the road, those are the things that affect us. But you're talking about them out of context if you don't talk about the companies that make them and what their interests are and what their history is and who's working there now and where they used to work, because those are all of the things that inform the roadmap that these technologies are going to follow. And to be a user of technology in this day and age is to be committed to certain roadmaps, some more than others, because some are much more locked in and others are much more modular and play more nicely with other services and ecosystems. So it's natural to talk about the companies that drive these things in order to understand the context, but that's how it turns into this team sport instead of talking about the actual field that we're playing on. It becomes this fantasy sports game where you're just talking about trading players around and you're not really talking about the beauty of the game anymore. I can't believe I just used a sports metaphor. That's crazy.
Well, and I think what you're saying is that both the optimism and the pessimism is entirely misplaced. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that we should be optimistic about, and weirdly we're not. And there's a lot of stuff that we should be pessimistic about, and weirdly we're not. Mm-hmm. The negative and positive feelings come more from the religiosity of the team that you have an affection for, mm-hmm, than it does the reality of what something is providing or putting into the world. And that's a weird thing. And yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I very much feel like it is religion, and not in the weird way that people talked about it years ago when people said that there was the cult of Apple,
right,
which just meant that you liked a product a whole lot. This has shifted into something much more real than that kind of alarmism, which is something more insidious and something also much more subtle. You have decided the things that move you or compel you or the team of people that you like the most. And then you switch into defensive or offensive mode, mm-hmm, depending on the articles or the things or the products that are released. And I mean, that's religiosity without any kind of sanctity.
Yeah.
There's nothing driving that that's actually compelling or interesting. It just is the thing that you've decided to do. And that was kind of weird when that was being formed, and I could see the problems of it. And now, you know, we're 5-10 years into this stuff, and that has become so deeply embedded into people that there's no turning the narrative around at this point.
Yeah.
Whatever you felt about Apple 10 years ago, you're probably going to feel until the day you die.
I sort of disagree with just that last part, because I think that there is a sort of tidal force to this, and that people are subject to it. It changes the way that fashion changes. It certainly doesn't raise to the level of people changing their minds actively, consciously, the way that you're saying that they aren't, that they won't, and they won't. That's not what it is. It's subconscious that when the kind of tide shifts from underneath you about any one of these companies or the whole environment, it pulls everybody along.
I feel like we're even both saying the same thing in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Apple's a great example of this, which is that Apple has not been fulfilling people's expectations that are on Team Apple, and that what they felt is not criticism, but this weird, profound loss.
Yeah, mourning.
Yeah, of real mourning. And that's what I mean, is instead of viewing it as this, you are an unbiased consumer, you are part of this unflinching religion. And when the religion doesn't fulfill your needs, you don't switch teams. You just carry on awkwardly.
Yeah, right.
and do your best to write your feelings out, to process your feelings out. And I mean, I think that's a really interesting reality, because to jump on your sports analogy, it's so much different than someone who loves the Denver Broncos or any other team, because this is something that is affecting your day to day in a way that very few things do.
Right.
Because you're constantly touching these technologies and you're constantly being acted on by these technologies, these products. So yeah, I mean that's the problem and the non-changing reality of this.
The thing that so-called religious people seem to be unable to do, and by which I mean people in the world of people who talk out loud on the internet about technology and have religious opinions about it, seem to be unable to live in ambiguous states about it. And you and I both started off talking today by kind of griping about things that are uncomfortable in our current devices and software and changes that we want to see. I mean, I think that's natural, but I think that the mourning that happens and the mourning that's happening right now in the, particularly in the Apple media ecosystem, which is the source of most of the like energy behind me wanting to talk about this these days, the mourning is all happening because people are unwilling to think big about it or wait or be patient. And that's understandable, because just like you said, you're touching these things every day, and for a lot of people the problems are actually much more severe than they are for me, for example. Like if it's something that makes a huge difference in the compiled time of your application, like that's going to really drive you crazy, or in transcoding of your movie, whatever it is. Like those kinds of top end pro uses that people are really mourning about Apple failing to serve, like I understand the pain of that. But at the same time, my stuff crashes on a pretty regular basis for reasons that seem OS related. And, you know, I just had this long saga on back and forth with Apple support about a problem I was having with my watch, which I really don't want to get into because of how boring the problem was. But I was willing to hang in there because of this sort of science project of seeing what tech support for a low-level software bug on a new Apple device would be like at this time in history. But I had this willingness to roll with it, because it still seems miraculous enough to me that this stuff works at all, that like I'm just willing to bear some of this and to wait for some of this to get better and to appreciate it for what it is. And it's really weird for me to feel like I'm the countercultural one for being more or less happy with the way things are, and for not being willing to mourn the loss of something that seems over from the point of view of commentators about Apple who spend all their time thinking about it. And some of this bewilderment that I feel, I think, comes from feeling like some of those people, some of the people who have made their bones as Apple commentators, are actually newer to the ecosystem than I am. And so their feelings are still new, and they haven't grown up playing with this since they learned to read like I have. And that gives me some patience that I feel like some of these commentators don't have. But this is something that I feel like I've heard you say before too, that like living on kind of the ragged edge of this is exciting.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that probably I am the most happy with my hardware that I have ever been in my entire life. When the iPad Pro first came out, for the first time I saw the computer that I've always wanted. And with every iteration of it, even though, like I said, there's some clumsiness to it, there's at no point where I think this iPad Pro that lets me miraculously edit raw photos immediately and do stuff like edit this show with touches of my finger instead of having to load it all into Logic. Like, there are so many things that I do on this weird 10-inch slim device that I absolutely love. And the same thing with my iPhone. The iPhone 10 is probably my favorite phone I've ever... it's definitely my favorite phone I've ever had. And it feels like the future in some really cool ways. And the Apple Watch literally changed my life.
Yeah.
It made me care about my fitness in a way that I'd never really done before, which has been really, really good for me. And I never had like extreme issues, but as somebody who is an achiever, filling the rings every day was an incredible gamification, which I don't love that word,
yeah,
but we'll use it anyways, that helped me put some stuff in perspective and set aside some time for my physical well-being that I wouldn't have done otherwise. And then also helped me with my mental well-being with apps like Breathe,
yeah,
that have helped me integrate meditation into my life in ways that I had struggled to do in the past. So with every device that I have, I feel like I'm in a very good place. The thing that I'm annoyed at in 2018 is platforms, but the thing that I'm in love with is my hardware.
Yeah.
And yeah, I feel like people aren't seeing the incredible rate of progress that we're actually living in, because the thing that they loved or the thing that they relied on didn't work as well or didn't change as anticipated. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem for them.
Well, and I think a lot of the commentators don't get or don't appreciate the kind of spiritual values that you just expressed about the watch in particular. I mean, it's the health aspect. Like, people understand that the bullet points about the Apple Watch are that it is a fitness device, that it helps people with their fitness. And even some of them say, like, yes, I wear the Apple Watch and I fill my rings. But it's so much more meaningful than that. And I think, maybe you didn't say it just now, but I think that if pressed, you would say, like, it's about living a good life. It's not just about filling the rings, right? It's like about having a better life.
Absolutely. And even at this point, I have gotten to that place where I actually took the rings off of my Apple Watch screen about a month ago. Mm-hmm. Because I don't care anymore.
Because you're hitting it?
Yeah, I'm hitting it every day. And if I'm not, it's not a big deal. It's like a real honest to God reason, like driving 9 hours to LA or something weird like that. And I won't hit my stand goal because of that.
Right.
But there are still so many little weird check-ins that I love for the Apple Watch. I've logged every single workout that I've done in the Apple Watch for ages now. And stuff like that has been so helpful in creating a routine that's really healthy for me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's not just the driving, fill the rings feeling, but that was such a good platform for which to say, let me actually take a look at my life as a whole and evaluate it and see how technology can help me.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I love the most about technology, is the way that it helps us do so many things. And I feel like instead of looking at the ways that technology makes us better, we're always looking at the ways that technology is failing us from some vantage point. Mm-hmm. And that just is such a profound bummer.
Yeah.
That's not a interesting or engaging method of conversation to me. And I wish that there was less of it, but there just isn't.
Yeah. And it attracts so much attention that it, because people just want to wallow in it. I don't know. I don't understand. I mean, like, I don't understand why the watch is the big one for me, and it's made me care about my life more. The technology that surrounded me was encouraging bad habits that were more forceful to me than my caring about the quality of life. And the watch has transformed that utterly, and the LTE watch has transformed it to a point that I didn't expect to get to anytime soon. For me, just giving myself the permission to leave my phone at home, giving myself permission to go get lost somewhere without my phone, because I can still communicate and navigate and find stuff to do. Just having that outrageously expensive $10 a month permission to do that has changed the way that I live. I go out every morning for an hour without my phone, and I still have podcasts to listen to or music to listen to, and I'm tracking my fitness, yeah, but like, if I need to like stop and write something, like if something occurs to me, I can stop and do that with my voice, and it is either accurate or accurate enough that I can fix it when I get home. People say that it's just for notifications and fitness. That's what the watch is for. I don't find that to be true in the slightest. I'm finding it to be for exactly what I want technology to help me do when I'm out living my life in my body in the world without looking at a screen and without getting sucked into some virtual space. I'm sounding super religious right now. I feel like I'm like preaching like intensely about the value of this, but I am. Like I think that the phone, like liberating us from the black rectangle, is such an imperative right now. Just the pernicious effects of the whole attention economy are epitomized by the smartphone. But in a broader sense, like the thing that I'm railing against about the tech media is that so much of it seems so fixated on staying chained to the screen, to the desk, and to the way of working, and to the things we work on, and Apple not serving us as people who want to use this stuff the way we want to use it all the time is such a problem for these people, because they're not interested in Apple working on ways of freeing us to be like healthier, more embodied, more out in the world people. The music stuff that Apple's doing now is perplexing to some people, and I'm not gonna get a HomePod, but the fact that they're fixated on making the best possible experience for the use of one of our body's five senses, that like sound, like hearing things is something that they care so much about, I think is beautiful. And seeing things is something that they've been working on in the iPhone line for a long time. And they've just insisted on that to the exclusion of other features. And that is such a promising sign to me that what Apple is doing is like working on enhancing the human body. And like, the laptop is famously like the least ergonomical device in history.
Yeah, it really is, man. It really, really is. It's such a wild thing that this has been the same shape for so many years now. And I get it because, you know, I wanted one just recently because I didn't want an iMac. I worked at coffee shops enough that I needed something like this. But it is pretty funny that that is still the norm for how most people interact with the internet, which is to say how they interact with basically the number one thing in their lives. To me, this is such an important thing, right? Is I feel like we're at this weird place where the people who are developing technology understand that there is going to be a new interaction paradigm right around the corner. And the people who are stuck on the old interaction paradigm are really frustrated that their way isn't the one that's being prioritized.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is that they're kind of getting their way. And I guess I understand it in the sense that it's still the way today. I felt for years that the Mac was a platform of yesterday, and people might very much disagree with me on that, but I mean, it just seems really obvious. The thing that we're going to have going forward is not the Mac, but the iPad and the iPhone and the Apple Watch and whatever comes next for these devices and whatever new hardware Apple decides to give us. And to try and rely on the Mac as my primary device and see that as the future of what Apple is going to be giving us seems kind of bizarre, because I just don't feel like there's any world in which that's true.
And it is what people are mourning, because they learned about the potential of technology from the Mac and learned their ways of working and became so much more powerful and more efficient at doing things than they ever imagined they could be because of it. And that's understandable to me, but the train has left the station. I'm not even mad about it. Like, I'm thinking about what I do all day with technology, and every single thing is something that I would rather do on an iPad if I could do it exactly the same way. And like I was saying at the beginning of this conversation, there's very minor, definitely short-term feature changes that I need in order to be able to. And even making music, like making music is the most compute intensive thing that I do. And I've been a Logic Pro user on the Mac for a long time, but those skills already translate to GarageBand for iOS. And I have done demos on GarageBand for iOS. And, you know, if I had an iPad the size of a table, I feel like I could do much more intricate digital audio production than I can with a mouse. if I could put all my fingers on screen at the same time, I mean, there's just a little bit more computing power that needs to come into play before it can really be this kind of multi-threaded pro workstation. But it's obviously going that way. And, you know, the classic demographic that really complains about the Mac is developers. And I fully admit to my ignorance of their craft, but I'm trying to learn it. I have actually written about it to some extent, and I'm doing Swift Playgrounds, learn to code exercises, and that's all on the iPad. And it's not like it has translated into anything outside of the app, but like Apple has made a statement by creating this incredible application to teach you their new programming language. And the iPad is the device where you do it. It's not just that they're teaching you to program. There are actually touch screen interactions with the code that they are encouraging you to use. Like, you can type everything if you want, but like if you're making an if statement, you can tap the word if and you can drag down to the next line and create an else or an else if statement like you, with your fingers. And you also get like the autocorrect bar full of like the functions that you're using or the arguments that you're calling like show up down there at the bottom of the screen, and you can tap on that word and drag it into the code, and you can drag it around in the code. I feel like they wouldn't be encouraging that if they weren't trying to teach a new generation of programmers that code is going to be something that you touch with your fingers. And you know, we're not there yet. Everybody talks about Xcode for the iPad. Like, if we're going to develop iPad apps, you should give us the ability to develop on the iPad. But they've made the statement that they're going in that direction. And what about the point and click interaction would be better than that once it arrives?
That idea of a table-sized iPad speaks to me deeply. And I would love that very much. To see something like that, I think that is what I would wish to have as the kind of at home, at work environment.
Yeah.
That probably will come sooner or later, which is a very wild idea to me.
Yeah.
If you had to choose a single hardware device that exists now to study as the future of Apple, what would that device be for you?
Oh, it would absolutely be the watch.
That's what I thought, yeah.
In fact, I have a half-written review of the Series 3 watch that I think I'm going to hold out to on publishing because I want to see what the next hardware generation of the watch looks like before I start pontificating. But mm-hmm. I can already see the path to no iPhone for me.
Right.
What do I do about a camera? I'm not sure, but I think I would rather have a nice camera and a watch than a phone and a watch if I can make it to this glorious future. And of course, I think that the other shoe to drop about the future that the watch represents is whatever heads-up display technology they haven't released yet.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things in combination, that will obviate the need for screens, right?
Which is crazy to think about. That we're always talking about technology as if the technology of today will obviously be the technology for the extended future. And I'm with you. I disagree that that's going to be around for long. I think that the iPhone is a model that will go away sooner or later, just like the iPod did.
Yeah.
And if anything is going to outlive what we have today, it's going to be the Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because it's doing things that nothing else does.
Right. And it's touching your body in a way that your head, your glasses won't.
Correct.
In order to get biological information from you. And that's one of its key functions. But I think it's already supplanted the phone for me as the secure store of my payment information.
Mm.
Right now, the phone is still where the repository of the health information is, but like that seems like a matter of time. The sensors of the iPhone are already just a backup for when you don't have your Series 3 watch on, because this watch has all the same sensors now. And well, the other thing is that the phone is more secure than the watch is for now, with the biometric info that confirms that it's you, right?
Mm.
Like the Touch ID and then Face ID. Like those are the important security layer that makes it possible for iOS to say this is Drew.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is actually Drew. Whereas the watch is still relying on the PIN code method, but like it's pretty easy to imagine any number. I mean, like it's possible that there's even a way to verify it's you from your heart rate or something.
Right.
So once the watch can confirm it's you, like then it becomes your your ID. I'm still a big believer in dumb locks on doors.
Yeah.
But, you know, someday I can imagine just like the watch being the thing that says, this is really this person, and it then like you can let him in. The retina is also a good ID source, so who knows what the glasses will do. But like those two things, and then the ears, I mean the ears they've already got covered as far as I'm concerned. Like the combination of AirPods and the watch already feel like the next generation to me. I go out like that every day and I am listening to a podcast and exercising in a way that's tracking both my exercise and my location. And if somebody calls me on the phone, I can take that call while I'm running without doing anything except tapping my wrist one time to pick up the phone.
And texting.
My first like big test of the LTE watch, I was communicating with you the whole time. I was walking to a movie and I left my phone at home on purpose, and we were texting the whole time, and I was just either yelling at my watch or scribbling on my screen. And it was weird, it was funny, but it worked. I completely felt comfortable. I didn't care that people saw me yelling at the air.
and sooner or later, no one will care
right.
about that. That'll be very normal.
It's actually really remarkable to me how much more motivated I am to write out in the situation that I'm writing about instead of sitting at my desk with the cursor blinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible to have a stream of consciousness writing session, mm-hmm. so to speak, by just dictating something into drafts or whatnot, and then turn that into something very tangible yeah. from start to finish.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really interesting to me that you have found a way to replace this device that most people would say is completely unreplaceable
yeah.
via two items, the AirPods and the Apple Watch combined, that basically do every single thing of importance and don't do the things that are unimportant.
Yeah.
And that's actually a feature for you, right?
Yes.
The fact that you can't post to Instagram or browse through it, I guess you can. Although I remember a while ago, Twitter and Instagram or some apps started just removing the Apple Watch.
Pulling their watch apps, yeah.
Yeah, entirely. But whatever still exists, you could still have a very weird, minimal version of these platforms on the watch. But one, you probably wouldn't. And two, even if you did, it certainly wouldn't have the same addictive tendencies that it does on the phone.
Yep.
And that is a great thing and is honestly a interesting problem, quote unquote problem, for these platforms to try and tackle if they're really thinking into the future is, some of our users might be finding themselves leaving their phones at home more often as these technologies get better, which means they're going to be spending less time on our platforms. What are we going to do? And I don't think that there's going to be a mass exodus of people who decide they don't want iPhones and only have Apple Watches. But I think that it's significant that you could do that today if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't literally do it. You would have to have an iPhone at home.
Right.
But yeah, the only reason I feel that I need to bring my phone with me is if I expect work to happen while I'm out. And if I ever go to the park or the beach or whatever on a Sunday, I leave my phone at home now because other people will take the pictures. And because I just don't want it. I don't want the option of spending my moment of boredom checking the news.
I was thinking recently about how I heard that in the next version of iOS, there's going to be a beefed up version of Do Not Disturb, which I think would be great.
Yeah.
The ability to have some sort of automatic Do Not Disturb, very similar to the whole Do Not Disturb while driving thing, but not limited to when you're in a car, which is a pretty weird limitation. I mean, it makes sense for what they're trying to do, but I would like that during certain hours, you know, during my morning. I don't want to see any of these notifications until I sit down and start working at 9 a.m. or whatnot, because the whole vibe of waking up to a bunch of notifications is not a good morning aesthetic. I'm not a fan of that.
No.
And I would love for the iPhone to be smart enough to just not show it to me. But I've also thought that I wish that that whole restrictions area of the iPhone that I'm assuming is for children, where you can say, don't let apps on or don't turn the app store on or whatever those features are. I wish that that was built out into almost time-locked service.
Uh-huh.
I had thought about how good it would be to have apps only appear on my phone during certain hours disappear at other hours. Wouldn't that be a neat thing if I could say, not only do I not want to see notifications for Twitter, but I don't want to see Twitter period until 1 p.m. or something like that. And if that kind of system existed, I would be all over that. But in a weird way, it does exist if you use the Apple Watch as your phone, right?
Yes.
Because you're doing that. You're doing that by saying, I actually have every single thing that I need so far as text messages and phone calls and, you know, maybe one or two other types of notifications, right? Turned on the Apple Watch. Because you can do that. Isn't that correct?
Yeah. I don't see my phone until like 9 a.m. every day. And I wake up at 6 a.m. And it's all helping me and none of it is showing me things. So the granular control over which notifications go over to the watch is the first step. And the choice to hide and show certain apps on the watch, even the way that I've come to set up the faces on my watch, prevent me from even seeing those kinds of badges. And I have a series of watch faces that I move through as part of the morning ritual. And that modality that you're talking about is partially built. And I think what we hope for is that the next generation of the home screen, which still has never changed before, is something that serves that even better. I would love the idea. I mean, it's a related idea to the one you just described, and I want it on the watch as well as on iOS devices. But the idea of making pages of apps or complications or whatever contextually aware instead of just manually swiping through them.
Yeah, man.
That's the real big one. Like if I could have a different page of apps come up at different locations or times of day, I would have 12 of those.
Well, and this is proving the point about the Apple Watch being the future to me is that concept of a face model that is dependent on your current needs and current experiences, which just does not exist on the iPhone and iPad. And I've been mad about that for years.
Yeah.
The idea of having context-dependent faces is awesome. And I really was hoping that that would exist all the way back in iOS 7. Every single year that the iPhone gets an update, except excluding this year, because I'm assuming that we're not going to see any major stuff because we're hearing that it's going to be a bug fix type of year.
We specifically heard they punted the home screen update from this update.
That's what I've wanted from the iPhone for so long, is a new home screen that actually was dependent on the context that I'm in. That, again, is where the Apple Watch is really excelling, isn't it? Is the fact that that exists right there. And this is an interesting thing for me. I think I would like to experiment with that. I don't have the LTE watch, so I can't leave the iPhone at home.
Yeah.
But I can certainly leave the iPhone on a charger or on my desk as I'm walking around the house, or just in my pocket. I mean, that is a possibility. We don't have to pull it out of our pockets every 10 seconds if we really don't want to. I feel like that's the way forward. And that is why I find myself interested in technology as a whole, is because the last time that we talked, I feel like I took a very dour approach to the world, because I look at these companies like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and say, I don't think that you care about me. And that is the sole reason why I am a huge Apple fan and have been for so long, is because I do have a sense that they do care about me. And maybe not me, but humanity or creativity or these things that I value are core values for them in a weird way that just is not true for other people when it comes to their bottom line. And I think that the Apple Watch is the perfect case of a technology that shows the future of a company, and that future feels very bright and interesting to me. I just don't see people who are getting excited about the potential of these devices. I see people criticizing their lack, and I see people talking about how it doesn't work for them, and I see people talking about how they're annoyed that this thing is taking over the thing that they wish was being developed. But I don't see anyone actually saying, oh, look at this, it's actually pretty intriguing and futuristic and full of awe. That just isn't the narrative.
And, well, that mushy stuff doesn't fit the narrative of what the story of technology has been up to this point, because it hasn't been possible. It's only possible because of the incredible power and miniaturization able to pack into a package this small, which only has existed for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And what's disappointing is how long it's taking people who supposedly think about technology a lot to catch up with that. And they're not seeing the transition that's happening. they're just mourning the apparent slowdown of progress in the linear direction that they were used to. It is remarkable that the emotional tone of this conversation is so different from the last one we had, because now we're talking about our bodies and our power and our humanity. And last time we were talking about the cyborg high of dehumanizing technology that the power and money seem to want to build, with Apple as this inscrutable exception, inscrutable to people who don't get it, that everything else is headed in this completely pervasive, all-encompassing matrix direction, and there's just this one other version of the future that has to do with giving the human body superpowers. The one other thing that I'm watching with interest that isn't in the Apple world, the one kind of trouble spot from a disruption standpoint that I'm starting to detect is real, is Magic Leap. And it's been all hype so far, and for all we know, they could be bought by Apple tomorrow, or they could be bought by Microsoft tomorrow, and who knows. But the founder was, or CEO was on, maybe it's both, was at the Recode Media Conference on stage with the CEO of the NBA. I think it was the CEO. But the NBA person and the Magic Leap person were up there together talking about how the NBA is working with Magic Leap on some kind of new immersive visual experience of basketball. Peter Kafka, the Recode guy who's hosting this interview, says other people call this augmented reality, right? And the Magic Leap guy pushes back really hard on the use of that buzzword, and it's not a very convincing argument that it's not just augmented reality but good. But what it sounds like they're doing is making this really convincing 3D overlay of the world, and I hope Apple's working on that too, because that's like another future from here. Like the one we're talking about, the one where like these technologies are just supporting our activity and humanity in the world that we understand, like that's one thing, and that's hard enough to see, to foresee and to understand and to get used to. But the one coming up around the corner from that one is one where there's real interactions with unreal things,
yeah,
in the world with us, and we can't even begin to fathom the impact of that. But we have time, and in the meantime, the one that's here now, training us to be healthier and to keep our phones in our pockets, helps us get around the corner to be ready for that kind of future.
Well, it's funny that you said that last time we were talking about how these social media platforms are turning us into bad cyborgs. But this time we're talking about how Apple is turning us into good cyborgs.
Good cyborgs,
That is in a very real way keeping us from the distractions that are present on the phone.
Yeah.
And that is a very strange and important conversation to be having as we go forward, right? As the cyborg model becomes less science fiction and more just real. No one thinks of the future where we're all wearing these heads-up display glasses right now as something that's going to be present soon. But I have the very real memory of when no one thought that we were going to be holding phones and staring into them every day, every hour of the day, when that was just as strange of a concept as the glasses will be. And there has been a war for our attention in this season of technology, and I feel like the good people lost this war. And there's not really a whole lot that I think we can do about that, to be honest. I think that the addictive tendency is too pervasive, and the things that these social media platforms are doing to us are too good, even for people that know the tricks, you know the magic of it, know the insidious nature of it. Like me, I'm still on Twitter every day, so I kind of feel like that's a lost cause. But then there's going to be a turning point where those things don't work anymore. And the question is that going to be a battle that is won by the people who ask us to keep in touch with our humanity, or won by the people who are asking us to be lost in an entirely different and entirely more realistic virtual world of distraction? And that is quite terrifying, if I'm being honest, because if I think that Instagram is bad and soul-sucking, boy, oh boy, can I wait for the virtual reality future that I'm sure people are already working on thinking through and gamifying. So yeah,
coming up with advertising models for.
Exactly. Exactly.
My friend Amber Case would say, in response to your good cyborgs versus bad cyborgs futures, that we've always been cyborgs. Mm. And that cyborgs, maybe that word is unnecessary because really the word human suffices to describe what we're talking about, which is a bipedal mammal with a great frontal cortex that's useful enough to help it devise technology to augment its environment and improve its life. And, you know, from the moment we lit a stick on fire on purpose, we became cyborgs.
Yeah.
And in most objective measures, technology has brought us out of the muck of life.
Yeah.
And so that whole history of being cyborgs tells us anything. It's that we have agency over the outcomes. And so just not surrendering to the very base appeal to our attention and maintaining our higher, more virtuous faculties might be all we need to do to be good cyborgs rather than bad cyborgs. And while that might sound like a tall order, on the other hand, like, it's the same moral imperative that we've always had to be good instead of to be lazy.